Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
OHS Harp Ensemble to perform at Mall. The Odessa High Harp Ensemble will be putting on a performance at 11 a.m. December 10th at Music City Mall. The performance will take place on the carousel stage and is free and open to the public. The Odessa High Harp Ensemble is under the direction of Francesca Florence. For more information about the Odessa Harp Ensemble, go to tinyurl.com/nh9sr3ny. Sounds of the Season to take place Saturday. It's one of the more popular shows that the West Texas Symphony puts on each year, and it'll take place this weekend with Sounds of the Season. The concert will take place at 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Noel Performing Arts Center. The highly anticipated performance features cherished holiday music, Christmas classics, majestic choir music, and caroling favorites that'll delight audiences of all ages. Quote, "We're extremely excited," end quote, West Texas Symphony Executive Director Ethan Willis said. Quote, "It's always huge amounts of fun for us to be able to perform this concert every season. We change up a couple of things here and there, but the general feeling and spirit is of Christmas and the holiday season, and we just love ushering it all in with that concert during the first weekend of December," end quote. Under the direction of conductor Gary Lewis, the evening's festivities will showcase the talents of the West Texas Symphony Orchestra, the Symphony Chorale, and the voices of the Permian Basin Youth Choir. Sounds of the Season this year will feature holiday favorites such as A Christmas Festival, selections from The Nutcracker, Carol of the Bells, A Most Wonderful Christmas, and many more. With so much different Christmas music to choose from, Wills said the process of narrowing the selections each year isn't too arduous. Quote, "It actually isn't too difficult for us because it's an all-hands-on-deck project," end quote, Wills said. Quote, "Gary normally is the one that chooses the programming that we do in our concert season, and I'm involved in some capacity, but with this concert, the chorale director has a say in what he's programming. Our children's choir director, Emily Baker, has a say, and each of our chamber groups actually picks their music too. It puts on everything that we have to offer, but a lot of the selections of music is a collaborative effort, and the only thing that we need to do is that we don't repeat anything. It allows everyone to put their own mark on it, and the burden is not just on one person," end quote. This weekend's concert is the second of the four POPS concerts that the West Texas Symphony will do this season. The concert is a premier way for children of all ages to celebrate the holiday season. Quote, "We love doing this music," end quote, Will said. Quote, "We know most students and children have heard it before coming here. We're playing music that they know and love and enjoy, and that's a benefit to us. There's something about Christmas music that has made it very timeless. A lot of that music can be higher quality and more demanding on the performer, but you wouldn't know it because it's been in so many movies and it's very timeless, like Carol of the Bells. There are so many great versions of these songs, and it's the best of all the worlds combined into one. Pops, classical, and music that everyone knows," end quote. Sounds of the Season will feature the full assortment of the programs from the West Texas Symphony. Some pieces are brought back and performed almost every year, while others are recycled every couple of years. Quote, "We're always trying to showcase the best of what each group has to offer," end quote, Will said. Quote, "There are some standards like Sleigh Ride that we do every time, and it's a huge win. The audience enjoys it, but there are smaller selections. We try to cycle back to some music that we haven't used in a while. That's how we spread it around. We cycle through some popular ones every 4 to 5 years and then throw in some new ones as well," end quote. While the halfway point is approaching in the West Texas Symphony's 2022-23 season, Wills said December is one of the busiest months of the year. Quote, "This time of the year is kind of a marathon sprint for anyone that works in music," end quote, Wills said. Quote, "It starts to pick up in mid-November, and then as soon as Thanksgiving ends, our musicians are constantly going. We have the symphony concert 1 week, and then the next week is the ballet, and then the next week is performing at elementary schools with our chamber groups. That's not to mention the other things our people do. It's a full sprint to Christmas Eve and Christmas Day. As soon as Christmas Day is done, we take a break and relax for a hot second. That's a moment where we relax. Then we come back after New Year's and start building up again. In January, we're doing final preparations for next season, so we're thinking ahead and making sure the rest of the season goes as smooth as possible, end quote. Tickets for the show can be purchased online at tinyurl.com/4yjnvcft. Obituary. Carolyn Elaine Fott, Odessa. Carolyn Elaine Fott passed from this life into the next on November 28, 2022. She was born August 5, 1942, to Genova and Ed McKeska in San Angelo, Texas. She is survived by her sons, Jerry Carter, Christina, and Vernon Carter, Francine. Daughter Debbie Hastings, grandchildren Victoria Ray, Jeremiah Carter, Trevor Holcomb, and Chanda Clowner. Great-grandchild Sierra Clowner, Aubrey Holcomb and Gabe Holcomb, nephews Joe Gahn and Chris Gahn. She is preceded in death by her mother and father, Genova and Ed McKeska. Sister Sherry Gahn, brother Clark McKeska, and husband Albert M. Fott. A funeral ceremony celebrating her life will be held this Saturday, December 3rd, 2022 at 10 a.m. At Redeemer Lutheran Church in Odessa, Texas, Eric Stradler officiating, with burial immediately following at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral.
This is Jane, reading for the OA for Saturday, November 26th. Study looks to show why people are uninsured. According to initial findings from an ongoing study by Texas 2036, Texas has the highest rate of uninsured residents, and there are several reasons why. Most of the roughly 5 million uninsured Texans already qualify for a government health program or federal subsidies that would help pay for coverage, but they have not signed up. Texas' uninsured rate is 18%. Odessa's rate is 18.9%. And the rate is 8.6% for the U.S., Census Bureau data shows. Among uninsured adults ages 18 to 64 in 2020, the most uninsured county is Presidio at 44.5%, and the least uninsured is Borden at 12.6%. 82% of people uninsured were aged 19 to 64 in 2021. 17% were children, and 1% were age 65 and over, according to the 2021 U.S. Census Bureau American Community Survey. In 2036, surveyed 2,000 people. In their early findings, 30% of people surveyed said they didn't have coverage because they weren't currently employed. 27% said they had a job that didn't offer health insurance. 22% said they did not qualify for Medicaid, CHIP, or affordable care subsidies. 16% said they couldn't qualify for health insurance. 15% had other reasons. 12% said they didn't know how to get health insurance. 18% thought enrolling in health insurance was too complicated. 7% said they thought health insurance did not provide a good value. Another 7% said they had a job that offered health insurance but did not currently qualify for it. 6% said they did not want or need health insurance. 3% had other strategies to obtain health care, and 3% had immigration concerns. Odessa premiums for a 40-year-old single person making $41,000 a year would cost $68 a month. $195 for silver and $152 for gold for 2023. In 2022, the bronze plan was $116 and $216 each for silver and gold. Asked why the gold plan was less expensive in 2023, Texas 2036 Vice President of Communications Merrill Davis said the gold plan is less expensive than the silver plan as a result of bipartisan legislation authored by Senator Nathan Johnson and Representative Tim Oliverson, passed unanimously by the legislature passed last session. That law requires silver plans offered in Texas on the ACA marketplace to reflect actual costs so that Texans could maximize available federal subsidies, which are calculated based on the premium of Silver Plan compared to household income. This law prevents artificially lower-priced silver plans that lower the amount of subsidies available to Texans, Davis said in an email. It's too soon to see the full results specific to each area, but the early data is showing that, statewide, the amount of gold premiums relative to silver premiums has dropped dramatically, which should result in the phenomenon you noticed in the sample Odessa net premiums. It's worth noting that a similar effect is occurring with bronze net premiums, which should have be less expensive than they have been in the past as well, she added. This drives home the point that every Texan who is looking for health insurance for themselves or their families in 2023 should check out the ACA marketplace between now and January 15th, even if they have looked in the past and not found a plan they could afford or want. They may be surprised at what they see on the exchange this year. Charles Miller, senior policy advisor at Texas 2036, said 17 of the uninsured population are children. He added that children's eligibility for insurance from Medicaid or CHIP is much higher than for adults. It's much easier to qualify a child, so there's a big opportunity for kids who are probably eligible but unenrolled. There's this big group of people who are eligible for subsidies but unenrolled. We have it listed 43%, and that's a little over 2 million people as of that 2019 number, Miller said. That 2 million figure will probably be a little bit higher now because of a couple of changes to the law in the last couple of years, he added. During the pandemic, as part of the American Rescue Plan Act, they increased the amount of federal subsidies that were available. And crucially, when the ACA was started, you were eligible for subsidies if you earned between 100% of the poverty level and 400% of the federal poverty level. They've removed that ceiling, so there's no longer a hard cap, Miller said. The federal government also announced a change to the family glitch, which refers to a 2013 ACA implementation rule that based eligibility for a family's premium subsidies on whether available employer-sponsored insurance was affordable for the employee only, even if it's not actually affordable for the whole family, the healthinsurance.org website says. That rule was changed in time for 2023 enrollment, the site said. That subsidy-eligible population is probably the largest group of uninsured Texans, and those are people who could sign up for an ACA plan and get subsidies for it, but are currently not, Miller said. He added that another part of the data that struck them was when they look at income level. It wasn't just people who were below the poverty line that were uninsured. It really goes across a large swath of income ranges. About a third of the uninsured in Texas are making between 200% and 400% of the federal poverty level for a family of four. That's a family making between roughly $50,000 a year and $100,000 a year. So it's middle-class families that are making up one of the largest group of folks who are uninsured. We wanted to figure out why this is. This goes against a lot of what we've heard and a lot of what the political debate has been over the last decade, Miller said. Miller said about 16% of Texas uninsured fall into a coverage gap. These are the people that, if the state were to expand Medicaid, they would be newly eligible for coverage. So if the state did that, which we think is a cost-effective solution, you solve for 16% of the uninsured population. But you still have the remaining 84%, and that number as a percentage of the overall state population would, even if we got rid of the 16%, that number would still be the nation's highest number and percentage of uninsured people in the country. So even expanding Medicaid would not make us go any higher than number 50 out of 50 states in terms of uninsured population. This is Jane reading for the OA for Saturday, November 26th. teen accused of injuring a child. An 18-year-old Odessa woman arrested on family violence charges Tuesday is facing additional felony charges because police said she repeatedly spat on them. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call from a 13-year-old boy around 2:40 a.m. Tuesday about a disturbance at the Brady Station Apartments. When officers arrived at the apartment in question, they found the front door was completely off its hinges, Sierra Pogue behaving aggressively, and her aunt and her 13-year-old brother with obvious injuries, the report stated. The teenager and Pogue's aunt told police Pogue became upset when she arrived at the apartment and found her brother there. She pushed the boy out of the front door, locked the door, and then kicked her aunt, who was sitting on the floor, in the face, according to the report. When the boy broke into the apartment, he and the aunt told police Pogue repeatedly punched him in the face and neck. When an officer was walking Pogue to his patrol unit, she tried to kick her brother in the face, and when the officer was placing Pogue into a patrol unit, the report stated, Pogue spit in his face repeatedly, making contact. She did the same thing to a detention officer at the Ector County Jail, according to the report. Pogue was booked into jail on suspicion of injury to a child, assault causing bodily injury, and two counts of harassment of a public servant. Three of the charges are third-degree felonies, punishable by 2 to 10 years in prison. Pogue remained in jail Friday on surety bonds totaling $26,500.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Saturday, November 26, 2022. Viewpoints. Law working correctly in school abuse cases. Eric Kalanak, Assistant District Attorney. I read with interest the column of Glenn Harwood regarding the indictment of several Trinity school administrators accusing them of failing to report the sexual abuse of a Trinity student at the hands of another student. Mr. Harwood is a private citizen who is entitled to comment on the issues of the day in our community. In full disclosure, I work for the District Attorney of Midland County, Laura Nodolf, but I have no direct involvement in this case. Mr. Harwood also announced his intention to run for District Attorney at the same time that an attorney for one of the Trinity School administrators, Frank Sellers of Fort Worth, filed a spurious suit to remove Ms. Nodolf from her office, a lawsuit that was summarily dismissed by a judge in Lubbock County. Mr. Harwood highlights the alleged fact that the parents of the alleged victim did not contact law enforcement at the time they learned of the alleged crime. His logic seems to be that if the parents don't care, why should the teachers and administrators? I don't know if it is true that the parents didn't report the crime to law enforcement, but highlighting this fact elides the difference between a parent and a professional educator. Teachers and administrators in Texas have a legal duty to report abuse or neglect perpetrated by anyone, not just the parents, to the appropriate authorities, regardless of the wishes of the parents. If you think about it, this duty is especially salient when the abuse is perpetrated by another student. There could be some instances when the parent of an abused child does not want to report the alleged abuse. I make no claims about the facts of this case. That means that the abusing student would be free to walk the halls of the school, free to abuse another student because no one wanted to report the abuse. It is in precisely these kinds of situations that this law is intended to work. Perhaps Mr. Harwood wants children to go to schools where no one has any duty to report student-on-student child abuse, and student abusers are free to walk the halls if no one has the courage to report the abuse. I think that is a harrowing prospect for any child in a private or public school. Mr. Harwood talks with great confidence. About the facts of this case. As I said before, he is a private citizen who can speak his mind, but Mr. Harwood is also an attorney who is licensed to practice law in the state of Texas, although his actual experience in Texas state courts is scant. Perhaps Mr. Harwood should acquaint himself with the Texas lawyer disciplinary rules that prohibit tainting of a potential jury pool.
Calcium supplements. Dear Dr. Roach, which type of calcium supplement is best absorbed? How many milligrams do you suggest for a woman in her 60s? Answer. Most calcium supplements sold are either calcium carbonate or calcium citrate, and neither one is reasonable in people who need calcium supplementation. I prefer dietary calcium when possible. Calcium supplements increase the risk of kidney stones, while calcium in food, dairy products, and fish with tiny bones, such as sardines, are excellent sources, decreases kidney stone risk. Further, there is some suggestion that calcium supplementation may increase heart disease risk, and while the evidence is conflicting, calcium from food seems safer than calcium supplements to me. The standard recommendation is 1,200 milligrams of elemental calcium a day from a combination of food and supplements for a woman over 50 or a man over 70. Read labels carefully. A 1,250 milligram serving, which may be one or more tablets of calcium carbonate, contains 500 milligrams of elemental calcium. Calcium carbonate is best absorbed with food, while calcium citrate is well absorbed with or without food. Calcium carbonate is not well absorbed by people taking proton pump inhibitor medicines like omeprazole, Prilosec. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach.
Dear Abby, for Friday, December 2nd. Woman accosted after church for saying things she didn't. Dear Abby, a friend, Marie, approached me in the parking lot after church, raising her voice, flailing her arms, and saying three people had told her that I told them to stay away from her and her husband. I told Marie it wasn't true, and she and her husband were my friends. She reiterated that three people said it, shaking her hand and holding up three fingers in my face. When I asked who they were, she wouldn't tell me. I asked her if she would get the three people together at her house because I would like to talk to them in person. She said no to that request, too. I then stated that we were standing on hallowed ground in the church parking lot, and I was telling her the truth. Again, she insisted she heard differently from three people. I was very upset to be accused of a total lie and at Marie's refusal to believe me. When I suggested we go inside the church and I would put my hands on Jesus' feet and swear I never said anything about her and her husband, she said she didn't have time. After I came home from church, I sent a text to the only two friends I had spoken to recently and asked them if I had said anything to them about Marie and her husband. Both replied no. I sent a copy of both texts to Marie so she could read them for herself. I thought it would be another way of showing I am not guilty. How on earth can I prove I am not guilty if Marie won't let me talk to the three supposed people or swear on Jesus' feet that I am not guilty? What should I do? Accused in Idaho. Dear accused, because this unhappy scenario happened on church property, consider discussing it with your religious advisor. Marie's actions were over the top. Could she have emotional problems that you're not aware of? If members of the congregation are really carrying nasty and disrupted tales after church, as she has asserted, your preacher may want to deliver a sermon soon about bearing false witness. You have my sympathy. Dear Abby, for many years, my wife and I have donated items to charitable agencies. I have been a blood donor for many years. Sometimes I get a thank you item, such as a t-shirt with words on it, indicating that I donated. I'm not comfortable donating a shirt with such a message. The person who receives it might not be a blood donor. While wearing it, the person might be thanked by someone who sees the shirt. That person wouldn't have the right to steal the glory and puff out his chest. It's a shame to trash a shirt. Do you have a suggestion as to what I might do with such an item? Donating in Florida. Dear Donating, because of your concerns about stolen glory, consider using the t-shirt for house cleaning. However, if you cannot bring yourself to do that, donate the item to a homeless shelter and consider it publicizing a worthy cause that needs more attention.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.